For very many years, Mike Carlton was one of the most recognisable voices on Australian radio. He was a ratings hit with 2GB in Sydney and would then go on to be one of the Sydney Morning Herald's best read columnists. But his career was prone to moments of controversy and even catastrophe. In 2014, his three-decade association with Fairfax came to a dramatic halt after he exchanged heated correspondence with the newspaper's readers. That controversial exchange and many others are detailed in his new autobiography titled On Air. Mike Carlton, welcome back on air.
Hi, Fran. Thank you. Thank you very much.
It's a story of your life, and it goes through your very colourful journalistic and on-air history, and you started your broadcasting with the ABC. I'm going to come to that in a minute, but I think by far, if you don't mind me saying, the most interesting and compelling part of your story is the story of how your mother and father met. It's remarkable.
I'm glad you said that. Yeah,
and how they fell in love. It was beautiful. Tell us that story.
That's really nice of you to say that. My father was a Catholic priest, but before that, he'd been a famous Australian athlete. No, I mean famous. He was in his day. He was a schoolboy athlete.
Olympian.
Yeah, rose to great heights, set Australian records, equaled some world records, and in fact went to the Amsterdam Olympic Games in 1928, which was a catastrophe. The entire team came down with a dreaded lurgy, and nobody did anything much at all. But, he was, in his day, probably as famous as, say, a character like Ian Thorpe might have been in his day. And he rose to great heights and was front page news. Athletics then was a very, very big spectator sport in Australia, not like it is now, but tens of thousands would flock to the MCG or the SCG or whatever to see the national championships. On the verge of going to the 1932 Olympics, he tossed it all in and decided to take up a vocation as a Catholic priest, a missionary of the Sacred Heart. And he thereafter disappeared. That was about, 1932, and was not seen for years. My mother was a Protestant girl from Sydney's lower North Shore, and wartime Sydney, she fell in love with an American sailor who was a Catholic, and she agreed to convert to the Catholic religion. So she went along to a monastery in some fear and trepidation, the evil Catholics, God knows what went on behind those closed doors, etc. Waited there in silence until a priest arrived, and according to her own account, she instantly fell in love with him, Father Jim Carlton. He took a little longer to fall in love with her. Not very long, no. They were married 4 months later. It was a whirlwind courtship, as they say. And 9 months and 4 days later, I was born. My mother was always very particular about that. 9 months and 4 days, Michael, she would say, so there's no hint of scandal. Until news of my birth got out, and the whole marriage had been hushed up by the Catholics and everybody else, and my father had taken us all to, gone to Melbourne to get away from some of the limelight. When it all came out, the two events were thought to be concurrent, my birth and the marriage. So everyone thought it was a shotgun wedding, and there was a considerable amount of scandal because of his earlier fame and so on. And the Catholic bigots all said it was the Protestant whore who had seduced the priest from the paths of righteousness, and the Protestant bigots said it was the papist who had seduced the Protestant virgin in the cloistered rooms of the monastery. So that's how I started.
And you learnt this directly from your mother's hand. She wrote her story towards the end of her life, didn't she?
She did. She died a horrible death of senile dementia. But before that, she wrote it all down. And beautifully so. She could really write. And she could type too. She was a secretary. And she put all this down. She wouldn't let me see it when she was alive. She gave it to my brother for safekeeping. She didn't trust journalists, and she figured if she gave it to me, it'd be all over the front page of the Sydney Morning Herald a week later. So I wasn't allowed to read till after she died. But it was a beautiful, moving, poignant account of her courtship with the man who was my father.
Well, we better get to your story. Turns out you could write, and you were a journalist. It sounds like your mother maybe never approved of that choice. But you began at the ABC, and you talk a lot about the ABC back then, and it was, sounded like the old days sounded quite something. But it was This Day Tonight, perhaps, which was a breakthrough, and it was breakthrough in the kind of journalism it was doing, wasn't it?
Yeah, I'd had a great career in the news department. I'd been a foreign correspondent, been to Vietnam, done all sorts of stuff. And then I jumped ship, and the rivalry then between the news department on one side and the current affairs department on the other side was volcanic. They hated each other. It was so absurd at times that they would hire different aircraft to get to the same news event. It was just bizarre. So it was treachery to leave the news department and go to This Day Tonight. But it was a wonderful, wonderful experience because it was a pioneering television program in both current affairs coverage and satire and stuff. And we did both. It had a wonderful host in Bill Peach and some great talented names like Gerald Stone, the immortal Caroline Jones, and others. And I was incredibly lucky to be part of that.
And how much trouble did you get into, and how much pressure did that bring down on you? And I ask that because, of course, the ABC's under a bit of pressure
yes,
lately, you may have
that.
Noticed.
Yes, I have seen that. And I look at it with a wry sense of deja vu, because the ABC has always been under pressure of some sort or another, and it certainly was in the 1970s. When the Tories tried to come down on This Day Tonight like a ton of bricks, and management aided and facilitated them in doing that. Both state and federal Liberal politicians were outraged by some of the stuff that went on This Day Tonight, and a few Labor politicians were as well, because we had a whack at them too. And so ABC management at the time ring-fenced the program, issued strict instructions that Bill Peach, the host, was not to ad-lib, not to so much as raise an eyebrow unless it had been pre-scripted. And they banned segments and all sorts of things. Eventually, we had to revolt, and we refused to put the program to air unless they allowed us to air an interview that we'd done. So when I look at the current turmoil today, it does provoke a wry sense of amusement, yeah.
It's 21 past eight. Our guest is Mike Carlton, former radio host, columnist and author. Talking of current outrage and current lack of independence or pressure on that, there's been huge blowback against one of your former colleagues from Talkback Radio, Alan Jones, over his treatment of Opera yeah. House CEO Louise Herron. And there hasn't been much of a response to Alan Jones, I've noticed, from sort of leading politicians. Do you think, does it strike you as interesting? You've been right there in the thick of this and the power of the radio host, the shock jock. Do you think it's remarkable in this age of digital and social media that the shock jock still seems to hold so much power and influence?
Some do. I'm actually travelling at the moment. I'm in Adelaide as we speak, and I've been around here and talking to people, Adelaide and Victoria. They are astounded at the perceived power that Jones seems to exert. There is no equivalent in the other states and cities of Australia. Jones exudes power, radiates power, and has power because politicians and others are prepared to concede it to him. And it's bizarre. He's relentless and remorseless. If he takes a sit against you, decides he dislikes you, for whatever reason, logical or completely balmy, he will rant and rave and for weeks about you, as we have seen with that Wagner family up in Queensland, where he set out to destroy them with not a fact to his name, but pounded and pounded and pounded. And he does the same with politicians, bombards ministers and public servants and the like with letter after letter, abuse on air. And many of them, I think it's just easier to cave in. And so they accord him this power, which he has no right to have.
Yeah, I suppose I'm wondering that in the change media scene that role is still there.
It still is, and his successor on air, Ray Hadley, has a fair chunk of it as well. I find it bizarre and damaging to democracy that people will take decisions based on what a radio shock jock happens to think. But in New South Wales, cabinet ministers would sit anxiously around the table waiting to hear Jones's latest pronouncement on a decision they'd taken. It was just bizarre.
Mike, back to your story. You write about the moment where basically journalism, a full-time gig in journalism, let's put it that way, came to an end. In 2014, you wrote a piece for Fairfax. You were a columnist there.
Yep.
It saw your time with Fairfax come to an end. The piece criticised the Israeli government for the bombing of Gaza. You got a lot of reader response. A lot of it was angry. You replied in much the same vein. You called one person a Jewish bigot, I think.
She was.
Do you regret that incident? Do you regret the way you responded to that incident?
I could probably have been a little more delicate, perhaps, but no, I basically don't regret it, and I stand by every word. You say I was assailed by angry readers. I was actually assailed by a torrent of absolute filth, gutter filth and obscenity for a couple of weeks, much of it, well, not all of it, but much of it from the Jewish community, who accuse me of being a Hitler lover, of having sexual relations with the aforementioned Führer, that sort of thing. I mean, it was filth. It was gutter filth. And after a few days, I got sick of copying it. The woman I called a Jewish bigot had sent me an email saying, "Catholic much?" I got emails from people saying, "Hey, we're the chosen race, get over it." Or, "We gave them Gaza, they gave us rockets." There was a torrent of Jewish racism and Jewish bigotry, and in the end, it got to me. And it was obscenity, and I hit back, and bugger it, I'm pleased I did.
Were you surprised or disappointed that that Fairfax, your media organisation, didn't stand by you through that?
Fairfax caved. There was also a mighty campaign from the Murdochracy, the Murdoch newspapers, to have a whack at me too, and they thought they could, one, bring me down, and two, take a whack at the hated enemy Fairfax, which they duly did. And Fairfax caved in a most cowardly fashion. I barely got a hearing. I was told I was to be suspended and so on.
Mike,
I told him to shove it.
It's a book of great tales. We haven't really done justice to the tales, the gossip, the wild parting of your career, but it's all there.
There's some funny bits in it too.
There are some funny bits. What's your favourite funny bit?
Lunch with Peter Cook of Peter Cook and Dudley Moore fame, actually. That's the one I like most. Have we got time?
Just give us a quick taste.
It's a quickie. I was invited to lunch with a mutual friend invited me to lunch with Peter Cook, and I've always admired Cook and Pete and Dud.
Mm-hmm. So we
went to a pub for a quick starter, and then we lunched solidly through the afternoon, getting more and more smashed on champagne. So it was fabulous in London. And eventually we were tossed out of the restaurant at about 7 p.m. and Peter suggested we must go and have a quick nightcap to sort of settle the evening. So we marched into some Victorian pub, one of those gloomy old black funereal pubs in London. Cook flung open the door and he said, "Potman, my good fellow, I brought with us kith and kin from across the sea, colonial friends from Australia. Bring forth your best ales and meats. Let us set forth the groaning board. We shall draw ourselves up by your warming fire." There wasn't a fire, but it doesn't matter. Cook was in full flight. And this pimpled youth was polishing glasses behind the bar. He was the only person there in the pub. And Cook went on in full flight. Let wenches lay forth the finest British hospitality and blah, 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 blah. And finally, even Cook ground to a halt. And the youth put down the glass and he said, "Why aren't you off?" That was lovely. The full force of the expression can't be said at this hour of the morning on Radio National, but you get what I mean.
All I can say is your time as London correspondent sounds really different to mine. Mike Carlton, thank you very much for joining us.
Thank you.
Mike Carlton, former radio host, columnist, author, of course. He's written a number of naval history books that are fabulous too. Cruiser, First Victory and Flagship, all of them great. His most recent work, though, his autobiography called On Air, published by Penguin Random House.